Okay, so this brings me up after fertilization to the first week. And basically, in the first week, we had fertilization in the first... The vast majority of successful pregnancies and fertilization events occur within the first third of the uterine tube, in that extended fimbriae ampulla region at the end. And then all of the first week of development occurs in the freely floating zygote, then morella, then blastocyst as it moves along the uterine tube. All of the first week of development occurs enclosed within the zona pellucida still. So all of the mitosis occurs within the zona pellucida, enclosing it and protecting it during those early mitotic divisions. As I mentioned, these are rapid mitotic divisions. It goes M then S, M then S, so mitosis, duplication of DNA, mitosis, without intervening growth. And therefore, even though the chromosomal numbers are maintained by mitosis, the cytoplasmic volume decreases every time it undergoes mitosis. It's halved. So the cells gradually get smaller and smaller within the same volume, till we end up with a solid ball of cells. And at this stage, about day 3 in human development following fertilization, it's called a morella, which basically means a berry, because it looks like a berry. It's got those solid cells around it. From this point on, in order to continue dividing, there needs to be space made available for this rounds of division. And at this point, the cells undergo what's known as a contraction. And when they contract, it generates a cavity within the cells, a space. And as soon as that space appears, we rename the structure to a blastocyst. And that cavity is a blastocoel. It's a fluid-filled space. It's the next stage in development at about day 5. So the blastocyst is still inside the zona pellucida. We now have a cavity in it, and the cells at the periphery of this dividing mass become flattened against the zona pellucida and become squamous, or flattened epithelial cells, a single layer of cells. This layer around the periphery we call the trophoblast layer, and another name that's given to it is the trophoectoderm. It's a layer around the periphery of the blastocyst. Inside that layer will be a small clump of cells on one wall. And this clump of cells on one wall will be the inner cell mass. We don't get clever and give it any other names. We call it the inner cell mass. And the cavity is the blastocoel. These trophoblast cells continue to divide and get flat epithelial layer, a single cell layer around the periphery. This is a multicellular mass on the inside with a fluid-filled cavity. Then around day 5 onwards to the end of the first week, the trophoblast cells around the outside are secreting enzymes to break down the zona pellucida. And they degrade the zona pellucida to the extent whereby the blastocyst can now push through a hole that's eroded, usually at the site of where fertilization occurred, but it can be anywhere else. And at that point, as it comes out of the zona pellucida, it's called blastocyst hatching. So it hatches from this protective shell. This shell had lots of roles. It's involved in protecting the egg. It's involved in binding the sperm. It's involved in early blastocyst development because it protects the early stages of development and forces them to be constricted in that volume as well. But its job is over. Might be IT, excuse me. Hello? Jake. Well? It's working? Okay, can someone just try and load that page? Yeah. Are you getting the page loading? No, we're still getting the PHP error. So it's only that the whole class is using that currently. I don't know why we've suddenly had all these problems with it when it's been so robust for, you know, a year. Can you call me back when you've managed to get something, Jake? Because I've got the class actually sitting here and I've got to keep presenting. Someone try and reload that page again. Can you try and reload that page? No, not this one, the other one. Is it working? Have you hit the reload button there? Yeah. Okay, thanks, Jake. I'll get on with it. Thanks. All right. Okay, let's see how we go. Anybody else getting it load again? Great. Isn't mysteries wonderful? Okay, so here we are, lab 3. I'm going to skip the bit that I've just been through, which was the week 1 summary. Here's our berry. Here are images now of this development. Here's the blastocyst at day 5. It hatches out through a hole in the zona pellucida. So here's the blastocyst. There's the zona pellucida. And you can see it's forcing its way through a small cavity in the wall. And the importance of this is the zona pellucida had one last role. And the last role was, as long as it was present, it prevented the blastocyst from beginning implantation. So all of the early stages and development of the blastocyst occurs within the zona pellucida while it's not implanting. As soon as it hatches out, it's now capable of binding to the uterine epithelium. So when it first sticks to the uterine lining, it'll be moving along in the fluid secretions on the surface, so it rolls along the surface, gradually slowing down. And then it'll stop generally with this inner cell mass aligned towards the epithelium because there seems to be a greater adhesion on that side of the blastocyst. That first stopping on the site within the uterus is called adplantation, where it adheres to the epithelium. At that point, the surrounding trophoblast cells begin to proliferate, divide rapidly on the side where it's adherent. And this animation here takes you through that process. So the white cells, it's on the page about implantation, you can put it up on your screens as well. The white cells are the epithelium. The green cells here are the trophoectoderm or trophoblast layer. On this side, they've proliferated, and these cells are secreting digestive enzymes, just as they did to break down the zona pellucida. They're breaking down the bonds between the cells and the extracellular matrix of the underlying stroma and invading the epithelium as they proliferate. Some of the cells, it'll form more than one layer, but mainly a single layer around here. And this is the blastocoel cavity. As they proliferate, they invade the wall. It forms multiple layers, and the outermost layer are cells fused together, forming what we call syncytia trophoblasts, because they're not separated. They share a common cytoplasm. They're multinucleated. Underlying them will be a layer of cytotrophoblasts, a cellular layer. I'd ask you to be a bit quiet down there. Got to catch up on some time. Here is our inner cell mass, and in the second week is the stage of development of this inner cell mass as well. It forms the first structure of the embryo, the bilaminar embryo. Bi, two layers. The blue layer here is the epiblast. the yellow layer here is the hypoblast layer. The hypoblast layer will not contribute to the embryo. It's a transient developmental structure. It appears and has a role and then it's gone. So the inner cell mass is bilaminar in the second week. And in this week as well, we also see the beginning of a cavity forming in the epiblast layer here. And it ends up as a fluid-filled space. This space is on the epiblast side. I'm going to stop talking and you won't have anything to listen to on the recording. Thank you. The space on the epiblast side, that fluid-filled space, I'd like you to think of that as a balloon surrounded by epiblast cells with a space within it. So there are epiblasts all the way around here. This space is what space? Amniotic cavity. It's the first of our extra embryonic spaces. The hypoblast cells proliferate and line the inside of the blastocoel and form what's known as the primitive yolk sac. These hypoblast cells will be replaced later on following gastrulation in the third week when the cells come through the primitive streak to make endoderm. That endoderm will replace the hypoblast. So bilaminar embryo, epiblast and hypoblast. During the second week, the conceptus, which are all of the cells produced by the fertilization event, fully implants into the wall of the uterus. So all development in humans occurs fully implanted within one wall of the uterus. And later in development, as the embryo and fetus grows, it'll actually push that wall of the uterus over and fuse one wall of the uterus with the other. So the lumen of the uterus is lost later in pregnancy as the fetus grows in the wall. This implantation also affects the uterine lining. It stimulates the process known as the decidual reaction and changes the endometrium into the decidua. As implantation continues, we end up with the epithelium reforming over the top. And at the site of implantation, there'll be a little coagulation plug, which can be sometimes observed. But the epithelium heals over the surface. While, when it implants into the stromal layers, it will open up maternal capillary beds, which will release blood into the spaces that have been formed by the syncytia trophoblasts. And now the implanted conceptus has access to maternal blood. Not directly, but it exchanges it through these support cells to provide nutrition. The other structures in the endometrium which can provide nutrition for it are what? What other features of the uterine lining? The glands. The uterine glands. So it will also open up uterine glands and access their secretions directly as well. So all of the events we're seeing here are occurring in the second week of development. Once this implantation commences, the syncytia trophoblasts have one other important role, and that is that they're the cells that secrete HCG, and HCG, remind me again, is what? Human chorionic gonadotrophin. These cells are the ones which now, when they've opened up the blood vessels, release their hormone back into the maternal blood. It's carried back from the uterus to the ovary. And this is the signal that the corpus luteum has been waiting for. It now will continue to synthesize lots of progesterone and support the lining of the uterus. So normally the uterine lining would be lost with the hormonal changes. The corpus luteum says no implantations occurred. I'm going to maintain the lining. Without implantation, there cannot be a corpus luteum maintained there and it would degenerate. Without implantation, the menstrual cycle would continue normally. It's also this hormone released by the syncytia trophoblasts at such high levels that the maternal kidneys filter it into the urine, and it appears in the maternal urine as well, and it's the presence of HCG in the maternal urine that's the basis of those commercial pregnancy tests. So you detect the HCG in the maternal urine. I'm going to jump to the next one because we lost a bit of time here. I'm sorry about not giving you time to ask questions of the tutors, but you'll understand that it's more important for me to make sure we get through the material. So in the second week as well, what can go wrong? So you're going to be practicing medicine, you've got to think about the clinical implications. Implantation is the event that occurs in the second week. The thing that goes wrong is implanting at the incorrect sites. And we call this ectopic implantation. And it occurs in a range of different locations. If the egg at ovulation has been released and the sperm have come all the way up here and fertilized it before it's gotten into the uterine horn, then the zygote can develop within the peritoneal cavity. It can hatch from its zona pellucida and then commence implantation on the surface of organs within the peritoneal space. And this can be on the outside of the ovary, on the outside of the uterus, on the gastrointestinal tract, on the mesentery of the gut, or even on the peritoneal wall. Any other structures, it's a parasite, it's looking for nutrition, it begins implantation on any of these sites. All of those sites are extremely rare forms of ectopic pregnancy. You'll be very unlikely to see it commonly occurring. How would we detect that? How would we look for an ectopic pregnancy of that kind? That empty space on the recording is a lack of answers. How? Think of all of the prenatal diagnostic techniques that are available to you. What's the one we're going to use? Ultrasound, thank you. Ultrasound in the early, in the first trimester, if you look around, you'll find the location of the conceptus. If it's implanted on any of these other sites, it will seem like a normal pregnancy to the mother because it's still secreting HCG, it's still getting into the bloodstream, it's still maintaining the corpus luteum, it's preventing the menstrual cycle. There's nothing to give any indication that it's abnormal. There may be some pain associated with it later on. The most common form of ectopic pregnancy, though, is if fertilization does occur, but the blastocyst hatches while still in the uterine tube. I'm going to come down there and I'm going to ask you every single question from now on, if you don't be quiet. And it can do so within the uterine tube. This is called a tubal pregnancy. 90% or more of the ectopic pregnancies are going to be tubal pregnancies. So this is the most common site for an ectopic pregnancy. The image in the lower right-hand corner is an example of an embryo that's developed within a uterine tube. The uterine tube is held open by the forceps, and you can see it's gone through all of the early stages of embryonic development. It can't go to completion. It needs to be dealt with clinically. It can be removed, it can be a partial hysterectomy or a complete one, but you need to deal with a tubal pregnancy. One of the reasons why this might occur, there's multiple reasons why you get a tubal pregnancy. It can often occur if the woman's had a series of infections or pelvic inflammatory disease, which has led to scarring of the uterine tube, which means that the cilia aren't as prevalent or available. The blastocyst isn't being moved along, so you get premature hatching because it's not making its way along the uterine tube. And there's a range of other reasons why this process might occur. So this is ectopic pregnancy. If we get into the uterus, X marks the spot. This is the most common site of implantation in humans. The posterior superior wall of the uterus is quite a common point of implantation to occur. Remember, where implantation occurs is where placentation will occur as well. So where the placenta will develop. If, on the other hand, it hatches out too late and the blastocyst ends up down here at the opening of the uterus, down near the cervix, then it can implant near the internal os of the cervix. and that would be abnormal down there as well. Or it can even implant and eventually develop across the opening of the uterus, a condition known as placenta previa, which you may have heard of, a relatively common abnormality of placentation across the opening of the uterus, leading to lots of clinical problems later on. In addition to that, when the placentation occurs even within the uterine body, there are some abnormalities related to how the placenta forms, and I've given you a list of the names here, incretia, paracretia, accretia. These are ways in which placentation is abnormal. It either implants too deeply, too shallow, or doesn't form the correct interface between maternal and fetal material. I'm going to stop briefly after I've described this. I forgot this last thing. The last abnormality I want to describe to you is this last one here, a hydatiform mole. Not a common abnormality, but reasonably common enough to be able to point it out. This is the entire uterine wall here. These are the uterine tubes, cervix down here. This large grape-like tumour within the lumen of the uterus body. This is a hydatiform mole. This is where the conceptus doesn't contain an embryo. All it forms is the placental components of the conceptus. There is no embryo developing within it. It becomes a tumour-like growth and once again needs to be dealt with clinically. And that condition is known as a hydatiform mole. I'm stopping there, ask a few questions, and we'll come back in 5 minutes to go on so that I can record the rest of the material for you. Sorry, guys, I didn't mean to...